ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So we're continuing our reading in the seventh canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Which verse is on the board? All right, this is the seventh canto, first chapter, text number two. Let me just find it. In the old days, we used to have a separate arrangement where the mothers and children could listen via speaker rather than risking disturbing Srila Prabhupada or whomever was giving class. Because it's understandable that children are not necessarily interested in sitting still to hear transcendental literature. Na hi asyartaha suraganai sakshan nikshayasyatmanaha naiva surebhyo vidvesho No dvegash, chagunasya, hi, na yasya taksuraganai, saksha nikshaya satmanaha, naiva surebhyo vidvesho, no dvegash chagunasya cha. Haribo, I think she would probably be better take if you take her outside, yeah. She's just not able to sit still. Haribo. Nayasyartak suraganai Saksha nikshaya satmanaha Nayava surebhyo vidvesho No dvegascha ganasya cha I'm sorry. Nasihi Nayasyartak suraganai Saksha nikshaya satmanaha Nayava surebhyo vidvesho No dvegascha ganasya hi Please chant. Nayasyartak suraganai Saksha nikshaya satmanaha Naivasurebhyo vidvesho No dvegascha ganasya hi Vaishnavins. Nahyasyartak suraganai Saksha nikshaya satmanaha Naiva surebhyo vidvesho No dvegascha ganasya hi So, synonyms, na, not, he, certainly, asya, his, artaha, benefit, interest, suraganai, with the demigods, sakshat, personally, nikshayasa, of the highest bliss, atmanaha, Whose nature? Na, not. Eva, certainly. Asurebhyaha, for the demons. Pidveshaha, envy. Na, not. Udvegaha, fear. Cha, and. Agunasya, who possesses no material qualities. He, certainly. So, Srila Prabhupada's translation for this verse. Lord Vishnu himself, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the reservoir of all pleasure. Therefore, what benefit would he derive from siding with the demigods? What interest would he fulfill in this way? Since the Lord is transcendental, why should he fear the asuras, and how could he be envious of them? Please repeat. Lord Vishnu himself, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the reservoir of all pleasure. Therefore, what benefit would he derive from siding with the demigods? What interest would he fulfill in this way? Since the Lord is transcendental, why should he fear the asuras? And how could he be envious of them? Srila Prabhupada's purport. We should always remember the distinction between spiritual and material. That which is material is infected by material qualities, but these qualities cannot touch that which is spiritual or transcendental. Krishna is absolute, whether he is in the material world or spiritual world. When we see partiality in Krishna, this vision is due to his external energy. Otherwise, how could his enemies attain salvation after being killed by him? Everyone who deals with the Supreme Personality of Godhead gradually acquires the qualities of the Lord. The more one advances in spiritual consciousness, the less he is affected by the duality of material qualities. The Supreme Lord, therefore, must certainly be freed from these qualities. His enmity and friendship are external features presented by the material energy. He is always transcendental. He is absolute, whether he kills or bestows his favor. Envy and friendship arise in one who is imperfect. We fear our enemies because in the material world we are always in need of help. The Lord, however, does not need anyone's help, for he is Atma Rama. The Lord says in Bhagavad Gita 9:26, Patram Pushram Palam Toyam Yome Bhaktya Prayachati Tadahang Bhakti Paritam Ashnami Prayatat Manaha. If a devotee offers me with devotion a little leaf, a flower, a fruit, or water, I shall accept it. Why does the Lord say this? Is he dependent on the offering of the devotee? He's not actually dependent, but he likes to be dependent upon his devotee. This is his mercy. Similarly, he does not fear the asuras. Thus, there is no question of partiality in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashyate Deshtarne Om Agyana Timirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Unmilitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishnang Stapitang Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sopadantikam Vandehang Shri Guru Shri Yutapadakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavangsha Shri Rupam Sagajatam Sahagana Ragana Tanvatam Tangsajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Purijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakanvatangsha Hey Krishna Karana Sindhu Dina Bando Jagapate Opesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namosate Tapta Kancha Nagorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshri Rishavanu Sute Devi Panamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhuva Evacha Patitanang Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Dittananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaur Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So we're beginning this new canto, the seventh canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. In this canto we get to hear extensively about the story of Prahlad Maharaj, And this question that's being asked is directly related to that incident. Srila Prabhupada spoke at length about Prahlad Maharaj. He loved to quote verses cited, that were spoken by Prahlad Maharaj. He was so obviously, you could say, attached to that leela that at one point some of the devotees were speculating that maybe Prabhupada was Prahlad Maharaj come back. We shouldn't do that. We should never speculate on the spiritual identity of the acharyas. Sometimes the acharyas reveal their spiritual identity, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur did in his Navadvip Bhavataranga. But we should never speculate. If the acharya pleases, he can reveal, or she can reveal their eternal spiritual identity. Otherwise, we just accept that they're pure servant of Krishna and relate to them accordingly. So Prahlad Maharaj was obviously a pure devotee of the Lord, because the Lord personally came to give him protection. That's one of the topics of the Srimad Bhagavatam, is the protection of the Lord. The devotees are one of the hallmarks or indicators that one is a devotee, is that one ultimately always seeks shelter of the Lord, doesn't take shelter of a bank balance or one's own intelligence or physical strength or that of any other being except for the personality of Godhead. So Prahlad Maharaj was in that category. He was only 5 years old, but he was completely fearless because he took shelter of the greatest personality, Krishna. So he didn't worry about the strength of his father, Hiranyakashipu, who was feared even by the demigods. It said if he would raise his eyebrows in anger, the demigods would tremble. Yet, his own five-year-old son was not afraid of him. So Prabhupada said once in a lecture that this is bad for business. If you're a demon, the greatest of the demons, everybody's afraid of you, but your own five-year-old son is not afraid of you. It doesn't make you look good. So that's why Hiranyakashipu decided he had to get rid of this boy. Because everybody else is afraid of him, practically treated him like God, and Prahlad was like, eh. You know, you're nobody special to me. To the point where he didn't even call him father. Prabhupada would recite this verse quite often. Tatsadamanya suryavarya dehinam sarasamudvinga diyam asat griha hitvatmapatam griyamanakupam vanamvajat yadharimashareta. That Prahlad referred to him as the best of the demons, asuryavarya, the best of the demons. And he told him that you're in anxiety. In other words, he's pointing out to his father that I'm not in an anxiety because I've taken shelter of Krishna. But that sadamani suryavarya dehinam sada always samudvignadhiyam asatgrihat. Why are you in anxiety? Because you've completely tried to take shelter of the asat, that which sat means eternal, permanent. Asat means not eternal, impermanent. And you're trying to find happiness and take shelter in that which is asat, and therefore you're always in anxiety. In other words, you're standing on a shaky platform. If you're out at sea in a leaky boat, you're going to be in anxiety. Am I going to make it back to shore before this thing goes under? So that's the situation in the material world. Anybody who's trying to find happiness in material energy is standing on a shaky platform, trying to cross the ocean in a leaky boat, and therefore always in anxiety. No matter what kind of face they present to the public, internally they're always in anxiety. So Prahlad was not in any anxiety, and he knew that his father was in anxiety, even though he appeared to be in control and this big, you know, fearful person that everybody runs away from. I know you're in anxiety because you're trying to find happiness in the material energy. And you're not going to find any happiness there. Just the opposite. You only find kunta, misery, and anxiety. And that's why the spiritual world is known as Vaikunta, because it's totally devoid of any kind of misery or anxiety. And one can be on that platform while one is still in this material world. This should be our goal. How can we get there? Even before, you don't have to die to experience it. It's not like some pie in the sky, because a lot of times people decry religion. They say, yeah, you're giving me a post-data check. After I die, I'll go to heaven or whatever. Yeah, but I want now. But you can get it right now. If we surrender to Krishna right now, then we can experience it right now. Kamara Manasagara. Nicholas wrote about Vastasu. Jivan Mukta. So one can be Jiva Mukta, one can be liberated even while in this material body. We don't have to wait till we go back or after death. You can be experience that Vaikuntha atmosphere right now in this material world. And we experience it ourselves gradually as we surrender more and more to this process, surrender more and more to following the path that's chalked out by the predecessor acharyas. Then to that degree, the anxiety goes down. Goes down, goes down, goes down. Unfortunately, though, if we don't fully surrender, sometimes what happens is that the anxiety level goes down and we feel fit again, and now I can go and tackle the material world again because I'm feeling no anxiety and I feel I'm ready this time to really take it on. And that happens. We've seen it, those of us who've been around for some time, we see it repeatedly. Devotees come, take to the process, chanting, dancing, prasadam, and some service, and they become very physically and mentally and intellectually and spiritually strong. And then they misuse that strength. They run out again into the material world to try to take it on and squeeze some happiness out of it. Not a good idea. So Prahlad Maharaj is a good example that one should take shelter fully. Even in the face of the greatest danger, his father, Hiranyakashipu, many of you know the story, maybe some don't, tried to kill him in so many ways. So many creative ways, you could say. He tried to kill his son. You know, by trying to burn him, poison him, have elephants crush him, throw him off a cliff. So many ways. And every time the scheme failed, his anxiety level went up. Because again, if you're the biggest demon that ever lived, everybody's afraid of you, and you can't kill your own son. Not only is the boy not afraid of you, but you can't kill him. You can't kill him, no matter what you try. It doesn't, then who's going to be afraid of you? You must have lost your potency or something. Everybody's going to think you're just a has-been. So every time he tried and it didn't work, his anxiety level went up. How am I going to get rid of this boy? Who's protecting him? What's going on here? So finally, he got so frustrated, he brought him in front of him and asked him, you know, where are you getting this power from to resist me? I can't even kill you. And Prahlad said, I'm getting my power from the same place you get your power. I mean, you get your power from Lord Vishnu, just like I do. So the father couldn't tolerate that and said, where is Lord Vishnu, this Vishnu of yours? Is he here? Is he in the... Yeah, he's right here. Is he in that pillar? And in the early days, we used to have the Vaikuntha players, some of you remember, when they performed that drama several times. Very, very powerful drama. Lokamangala, especially, played Lord Nrisingadeva. He could play any part. He could play Hiranyakashipu or whatever, but I remember specifically in this room he was playing Nrisingadeva. So, where is this god of yours? And when Hiranyakashipu hits the pillar, then Lokamangala comes out as Nrisingadeva. Ah! Tears him apart. So, this is indication again for us that we take shelter of Krishna, but we leave the result up to Krishna. It's not that Prahlad was demanding that you must come and do this and do no, I'm surrendered. I'm yours. So whatever happens, I know is completely under your control. Krishna is in complete control. That is Krishna consciousness. So this question of Parikshit Maharaj to Shukadeva Goswami is very, very important for us to understand. God is not partial. After the class yesterday, there was some discussion on this point about Lord Balaram and Duryodhana. But again, because Lord Balaram is on the category of personality of God, and he's seeing spiritually, his vision is spiritual. We see each other as contaminated. You know, I see everything that I think is wrong with you, and I see everything I think is wrong with you. But from the perspective of pure spirit, Lord Balaram is seeing everybody as pure spirit. It's not that he's seeing necessarily the faults of Duryodhana. Because that's just a temporary covering over the pure spiritual existence. We're all just temporarily covered. No matter how long we've been here in this material world, we're still just temporarily covered. So one who's seeing spiritually sees this pure spiritual being everywhere. The Ishapanishad reminds us to do that, to see spiritually. And for one who sees spiritually, then there is no anxiety or illusion. So obviously the personality of God, it doesn't have any anxiety or illusion. So Lord Balaram was not an illusion that Duryodhana is actually an evil. No, he's a spirit soul that's temporarily covered over. So he was seeing him like that. And that's why he could train him in club fighting and like that. He's not seeing him the way that we see. When we think Duryodhana, we think, oh my God, what a vicious you know, from birth, they were telling him, you know, right? Said, get rid of this guy. He's a dyed-in-the-wool demon. He's just going to bring the whole dynasty down. But Dhritarashtra was too attached. My son, Duryodhana, so he couldn't get rid of him. But Vidura advised him. He said, this boy is he's going to destroy the whole dynasty. Get rid of him. And Chanaka Pandit says that, you know, you can get rid of one bad son to save your dynasty, or, you know, whatever is necessary, in other words. You can do that. That's okay. So Lord Balaram obviously is seeing spiritually. Krishna obviously sees spiritually. So when the Lord comes and kills, and he doesn't have to. It's been pointed out many times that Krishna can take care of, and does take care of, so many millions of little demons just by his material energy. One little earthquake and so many thousands of people die. One tsunami and 300,000 people die. You know, like that. It's not a problem. Krishna does not have to come personally to kill the demons. That killing business is going on constantly by his material energy. So when he chooses to come and personally kill a demon, then that's a special situation. When he comes and personally kills Hiranyakashipu or Hiranyaksha or like that, that is Leela. Not so easy to understand. The question I had as a youngster in Krishna consciousness was, yes, I understand that Krishna has his fighting spirit. That's where we get our fighting spirit from, and he comes to the material world and stages a fight. But before that fight happened, like in the case of Hiranyakashipu, before the fight actually took place, the demons, they killed so many apparently innocent people, just like Kamsa. So many innocent children died in his attempt to kill Krishna. He sent his henchmen to Vrindavan and other places because he heard that the child that was going to kill him had been born and taken somewhere else. So he sent them out, and they killed so many children. So it seems just like, you know, in relation to Krishna's Leela, it seems like so many horrible things happened. So many children died, or in the case of Hiranyaksha, threw the earth planet down into the Garbha ocean. So much destruction and, you know, pain, it seems to happen before the Lord actually comes and, you know, wipes the slate. But because it's in relation to Krishna's Leela, everything is adjusted. Everything is adjusted. Everything turns out. That's why God, Krishna, is known as the all-good Supreme Personality of Godhead. Everything that is in relation to Krishna is all good. Whether or not we can see at any particular moment that it's good, that's what Prabhupada is pointing out here in purport today. That if we don't see properly, what did he say exactly? When we see partiality in Krishna, this vision is due to his external energy. So whenever we see any discrepancy in something that's related to Krishna, it's due to our being covered by the external energy, not that there's some actual discrepancy there. So we're being trained to see properly. This seventh canto especially is full of instruction on how to think properly, how to see properly. As I said, this protection is one of the topics. There are 10 topics of the Srimad Bhagavatam. I always push devotees to learn this verse, especially the brahmacharis. If you don't already know it, this is the homework for today. It's in the second canto. Atra sarga visargascha stanam poshanam utaya manvantara eshanakata naroda muktir ashraya. This verse, Shukadeva Goswami, outlines the 10 subject matters of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So that's your homework today. Find that verse and memorize it. Atra sarga visargascha. So sarga means creation. Visarga means subsequent creation. That's what Lord Brahma does. The actual creator is Krishna. Everything comes from Krishna. There's this joke, Bhajan Narayan especially likes to tell the joke about how, you know, the scientists, big scientists, puffed himself up to the point of thinking, now I can do whatever God can do. Who needs this God anyway? I challenge God to contest. So God comes, says, yeah, what do you want? No, I challenge you. Whatever you can do, I can do. So God, and takes some dirt, makes a body, and makes it alive. I've created a human being out of dust. Now, can you do that? So the scientist says, yes. And he starts gathering some dust. And God says, get your own dirt. In other words, we're always dependent. We think we're so creative, I can make this, I can do that. But we're always dependent on Krishna's energy. If Krishna doesn't provide his energy, we can do nothing. Nothing. So that's being pointed out in this verse. Atra, first of all, sarga, creation, that's done by Krishna. And then visargasya, visarga, subsequent creation is done by Lord Brahma. So, learn this verse. Atra sarga visargasya sthanam poshanam utaya manvantar eshana katha nirodha muktir ashraya. So ultimate is ashraya. We have to take Krishna as the ultimate shelter. We have to take shelter of Krishna just like Prahlad Maharaj did of Lord Nrisimhadev. Just completely give up. Don't reserve anything. Don't think that you have any other option for protection or for happiness or for anything than Krishna. That story is there of Draupadi. How when the Kurus were trying to disrobe her in the assembly, at first she was holding on to the sari and Dukshasana was pulling. And who is she? This is a, you know, just think of the biggest, strongest guy you can think of and then multiply that, you know, by 1,000 times. That's how big and strong these guys were back in those days, 5,000 years ago. And so she had no hope of resisting. So she was holding on and Dushyasana was pulling. And then she decided, I can. So she threw up her hands. Hey, Gopal. Hey, Krishna. And at that time, Krishna supplied unlimited sari. And Dushyasana was pulling and pulling and pulling till he got so tired and he couldn't disrobe her. So later on, she was asking Krishna, why didn't you come and save me? He said, well, you were depending on your own strength. As soon as she gave up and decided to throw both hands, because she was holding on with one hand and pleading with the other hand, but when she pleaded with both hands up, then Krishna came and supplied unlimited sari. So we have to come to that point where we're not trying to hold on and ask Krishna with one hand, but holding on with another hand. Both hands have to be begging Krishna, please protect me, enlighten me, enliven me, everything depending on Krishna, not depending on our own intellect or the fact that I know that someday the parents are going to die and I'm going to inherit a good amount of money. And no, none of that. Don't depend on any of that. Because this whole material situation, like I said, it's like a leaky boat, a shaky platform. And what's the use of money if you don't have anything to eat? Many people have found themselves in that situation. Like after World War II, famous case, in Germany, there were many, many very rich people who left after the war. They had millions of Deutschmarks. But because the whole country had been devastated, only a few pockets of farming was still going on. And those farmers, you know, you came with your millions of Deutschmarks and give me a bushel of wheat. No. Go eat your gold coins. So money is of no use. If Krishna doesn't supply food, fresh air, water, your money is of absolutely no use. So as devotees, we should know that thoroughly and don't think that, you know, the parents are going to die and I'm going to get millions of dollars and then I'll be happy. No, don't depend on that. And we've seen it happen. I remember in New York, there was one young man, parents died, left a sizable amount of money and he was out the door. And then many years later on, I saw him and, it didn't bring any happiness, just increased his misery. The happiness that he was experiencing in Krishna consciousness up to that point could not duplicate it with all the money that his parents left. Couldn't. Because happiness doesn't come from money, it comes from Krishna. That's mentioned here, the reservoir of pleasure, which strikes a particular chord with me because that's the book that brought me into the movement. As a college student in New York, 73, saw Devamrita Das Brahmachari at a book table, and he had this pamphlet, Krishna, the Reservoir of Pleasure. And that's one little pamphlet, proper packed with so much transcendental knowledge that it attracted me and I started going to the temple there. So we should always remember that. And that's the phrase to always remember, Krishna, the Reservoir of Pleasure. Because ultimately that's what we all want. We want happiness. We want pleasure. Only a crazy person wants displeasure, unhappiness. So, but where to go? Since time immemorial, we've been looking around this material energy for some happiness and we simply get slapped and kicked and beat up and, you know, and there's danger at every step. Subodhi told me just a few days ago, you could call him a devotee, he's not initiated, but he comes here all the time, was late night going around the corner here and three girls held him up with a gun. Kali Yuga, girls, three young ladies, held him up with a gun, shoved him around. He only had like $40 on him. They took his $40. Danger at every step. This material world is not a nice place, but we keep trying to make it into a nice place. And when Prabhupada pointed out even to so-called spiritualists, like in Mayapur that time when a bunch of these so-called spiritualist yogis, they came to see him. They wanted to plan some, you know, gathering, and they wanted to invite him personally. And Prabhupada told him frankly that, you know, trying to find happiness in this material world is like trying to decorate the stool room. They got offended. They don't want to hear that, because everybody wants to hear that there's a chance. My method, my approach will be a little different, and it'll work. I'll mix a little yoga with a little business and a little this and that, and somewhere or other I'll extract, you know, the right, I'll come up with the right formula for being happy here. But it's like decorating the storeroom. You may have, and many people do it here in LA especially, big mansion, you know, you go into the bathroom, gold fixtures, and it's, but it's still a bathroom for crying out loud. What happens there? What happens there? It's a place for doing nasty business. So that's the nature of the material world. It's a place for doing nasty business. It's not a place for trying to be happy. So Prabhupada said, take care of your business and go back to Godhead. Don't try to hang around here and come up with a formula for happiness. It's not going to work. What did I just say, Eric? Exactly. It's not going to work. And if you let that sink in, if you really, really accept that, like Prabhupada said, you cannot become really attached to Krishna consciousness if you're not disgusted with the material world. If you're still seeing it as a place of happiness, you're not going to make spiritual progress. You have to become disgusted with the material world. It's a disgusting place. I grew up in New York City, and you know, everybody knows the New York subway is like going to the hellish planet, going down into the subway system. And in that hellish planet, there are bathrooms. That is the worst. If you have to, by the answer the call of nature, you can't make it anywhere else, and you have to go to a New York subway bathroom, that's like, oh my God. So imagine trying to go into such a place and try to find happiness. But the people do. Some crazy people, they hang around the subway bathrooms trying to, you know, beg money or whatever. And you know, so that's what it's like staying in this material world. It's like being forced to go to the bathroom in the New York subway. So we should be intelligent. We should be like Prahlad Maharaj. Simply realize it's a disgusting place and I want to go back to Godhead. So we can stop here. Any questions, comments? Rigapati Prabhu.
Thank you for a nice class, Prabhu. Could you explain that thing about Balaram and Duryodhan again? I really don't get it. I mean, because Krishna sees with equal vision, but then, you know, the activity he performs of encouraging Arjuna to kill all the, you know, Duryodhana and crew, that makes sense. But Balaram, that doesn't make sense to me. I missed the discussion.
Yes, that's because you're not seeing a complete picture. In this material world, we're all killers. It's not that Duryodhana was a killer and the rest of us are innocent. We're all killers. We're all killing at every moment some innocent creature. We walk down the street. We're stepping on some poor ant. We're inhaling some little bug and killing it. We're all killers here. We're all killers. It's not that, again, Duryodhana and Dushasana and the rest of the, you know, sons of Dhritarashtra, they were all bad killers and the rest of us are so innocent. No, we're all guilty here. We're all killers. So when God comes, He sees us all equally. We're all a bunch of killers and He wants us to stop this killing business and go back to the spiritual world where there is no killing. So externally, it seemed that Duryodhana and Dushasana, these are worse, you know, than other people. But ultimately, when you look at the karmic baggage and you look at the activities, we're all horrible killers here. At every moment, every day, practically, we're killing someone or something. Whereas a pure devotee, they're merciful even to the bug. You know that story of Prabhupada right here in his room, called it a devotee and said, that bug on the carpet. And the devotee's looking, oh. He said, he hasn't moved. Take care of him. Prabhupada said, I've been watching him. He has not moved for some time. Take care of him. So from the perspective of the pure devotee, he's not seeing any difference. Yes, they preach to the human beings because the human beings can respond. He's not preaching to the bug. The bug is not going to respond. But ultimately, for one who's seeing spiritually, there is no difference between that bug and you. And so ultimately, for one who's seeing spiritually, there's no difference between Duryodhana, the Dushasana, and Brigapati, or, you know, it's the same spiritual jiva, same jiva, spirit soul. And when the Lord's pastime unfolds, being God, He can do anything He wants. So He's seeing Duryodhana as being a spirit soul who can be delivered just like anybody else. And was delivered because he was killed by Arjuna on the order of Krishna, so he got liberation. That's what's being pointed out here. When God kills, that person gets liberation. Or when the devotee kills on God's order, the person gets liberation. Everybody who saw Krishna while he died on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, they got liberation. So Duryodhana was liberated, obviously. He was killed directly by Bhima on Krishna's order. So he got liberation. Okay? Anything else?
Yeah, can I ask one more?
Sure.
I was in Florida recently, and Malati Prabhu was giving class. And I can't remember how she, you know, got onto the subject, but she mentioned that back in the early days, maybe it was her or it might have been Govinda Dasi, they asked Prabhupada, some incident came up and they asked Prabhupada, so Prabhupada, are you a cowherd boy? And Prabhupada said, yes. So, have you heard that before? Or?
I've heard that. I can't personally verify it. But, again, we're not supposed to speculate about the spiritual identity of the acharyas. If they decide to reveal to us, as has happened in many cases, fine. But if they don't, then we don't speculate about it. We just know that this person is extremely dear to Krishna. That's all we need to know.
Well, her point is, what more can you ask for? I mean, they directly asked him, and he directly said yes. So,
yeah, so
as far as she was concerned, yeah. Prabhupada is a cowherd boy.
Yeah. I don't know. But would it make any difference if he was a desire tree? We've had acharyas in our, you know, that have been, that's their spiritual identity. They're the crop of Riksha. So, again, from our perspective, we want, you know, what is the highest relationship? It was conjugal, therefore I must be a gopi. You know, we have that kind of identity, and acharya must be a gopi. Or, no! Everything is perfect in the spiritual world. So, Prabhupada, maybe that's his eternal identity as a cowherd boy, but if it's not, if it's something else, is there any difference? What difference does it make to us? The real thing is that we're suffering in this material world. He has come to open the door to the spiritual world for us. We should go through it without looking back. But unfortunately, we keep looking over our shoulder, thinking, wow, look at that. Let me go check that out. Let me go check that out. So this is lazy. This is lazy. This is laziness. It's caused by laziness. It's caused by hridayadaurbalyam, weakness of heart. You know what to do. You know what to do. And that's why we're all sitting here. We're convinced enough, we know what to do. But due to weakness of heart, we just won't really get into it. We're like, I'm speaking for myself. I mean, many of you here are pure souls, you're ready to go home. But weakness of heart, we become again attracted to that which we've already given up. Punak charvita charvananam, chewing the chewed. You chew something, you get all the juice out of it, you spit it out, and then you turn around and look at it again. Well, let me chew again a little bit. Maybe there's a little juice left. There's nothing there. There's nothing there. We should be convinced. Again, this is a horrible place. There's nothing here for us. Go through the door. Go home. One more and then we have to stop. Yes. Banabhata Prabhu.
Thank you for a nice class, Prabhu. I just have a question. I'm wondering if you happen to know when Krishna, the Reservoir of Pleasure, might be printed again.
I knew somebody was going to ask that. Well, for the last several years, and as you know, we all know, the book distribution in North America went way down. And the BBT can only maintain a certain amount of books based on what's being sold. The BBT is not independently wealthy. Whatever comes in, what we produce, we sell. Whatever comes in, that much money we have for printing other things. So based on the economics of the situation, we can only keep one of those pamphlets in print at a time, which means generally either Enchanting or Reservoir of Pleasure. So for the last several years, we've had Enchanting. Now it's actually time for me to reprint either Enchanting or Reservoir of Pleasure. I'll have a meeting with Savas when he comes back, and we'll decide which of the two we should go for. But it's been economically not feasible to keep both of those, unfortunately, in print at the same time. I know which one I choose. I'm always partial to Reservoir of Pleasure. But some devotees like Enchanting, and so, you know, either one is good. Pamphlet means that it has to be inexpensive enough for the temples to give it away free. They have to pay it. They have to buy it from the BBT. We have to buy it from the printer, so we can't give it away free to the temples. But it has to be inexpensive enough that they can buy quantities that they can afford to give away freely. So of that type of literature, we only keep usually either Unchanting or Reservoir of Pleasure, and it's time for one of those two to be reprinted. So if you're voting for Reservoir of Pleasure, then you get my vote also. Jai. Ransi Rajshiman Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai.